ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Watkins Award. Yes, sir, it is Monday, May the 31st. How time flies. I mean, the first show was January the 25th. And that was 18 shows ago, because this is the 19th episode of the Watkins Award. I'm T. Tate, and I'm here with my right-hand man, you know, my guy on my hip. That's J. Everett Pierce with all that smiles, you know, going on. And he always has to be in that vintage basement of his. And he always have to show those cowboys. But now he switched up jerseys on us on his left shoulder, you know, right shoulder to me. But to say the least, he has Deion Sanders there, as they say. Prime time. How you doing there, Mr. Pearsall?
I'm doing well, and happy Memorial Day to you, Coach Tate.
Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate you, and certainly this is going to be an exciting day. I mean, you know, every week people probably say, "Now, what is he talking about, some exciting day?" Every week is exciting. It's exciting. Well, it is always exciting to be a part of the Watkins Award. Now, you know, let me do a quick reset. A quick reset. And the reset is nothing more than an opportunity to just say what we want the listeners, the viewers to understand is that this is an education. And the education is to try to help you to take some of this valuable information that we're passing off for free. We're not charging not one dime. Now, if you just listen to a lot of the things that our guests talk about, Mr. Pearsall and I talk about, we're giving you information for your kids, whether they're going to play sports or not. But clearly, these young men are coming to the table and addressing what so many people fear to even approach, and that is sacrifice. They make the sacrifice in the classroom. They make the sacrifice on the football field, on the baseball field, on the basketball court. So, you know, Mr. Pearsall, let's talk about it again. I mean, just a quick reset in talking about the fact that the Watkins Award is for the top African-American male scholar athlete that is a senior in high school. So talk about what is it specifically that the award itself is looking for.
The award itself searches for, number one, obviously, the top baseball, basketball, and football players. So again, I say that lightly because that's where it begins. But once you are nominated for the Watkins Award, your ability to play any sport is then negated. And now you compete for the award itself. And what I mean by that is you're asked to submit a package that now tells our selection committee who you are as an individual. And there are components within that package that give our selection committee the opportunity to determine the level of scholastic aptitude and dedication that one would have in between their junior and senior years, their community service, their scholastic aptitude and their transcripts, and letters of recommendation, wherewith we get an opportunity to see, you know, what their community thinks about them, what the people that they may be involved with in their sport may think about them, what their church thinks about them, what the media thinks about them as individuals. We try to cover all of our bases so that we holistically try to find out who this person is off the field. And that is the individual that we honor, those five individuals every year for the Watkins Award. So again, let me restate, your athletic ability gets you nominated, but your ability to articulate through the package that we give you the opportunity to respond to gives us the ability to determine who you are off the field. kind of character you have, so forth and so on. And those are the individuals that we honor for the Watkins Award.
Wow. I mean, you know, Mr. Pearsall, you know, one of the other things I want people to know, I want to restate that, is that the Watkins Award is not a local award. It's not a regional award. It's a national award. So from coast to coast, from the West Coast, back to the East Coast, up north, down south, it doesn't matter where you live. The only thing that matters is that you meet this minimum criteria that you just talked about. But, you know, clearly they have to at least fill out some paperwork, whether it's electronically or it's, you know, the paper itself. But nonetheless, there is a selection committee that goes through the, because it doesn't guarantee you just because you this high-end athlete and you got good grades. So there is, you know, a selection committee that goes through these applications and make the recommendations and come up with how many people. I mean, is it unlimited to the number, or is it a certain amount of people, Mr. Pearsall?
So from a nominating perspective, there are 250 nominations that go out. 250, 150 football, 50 basketball, 50 baseball. Again, it varies from year to year in terms of the number of people who actually apply for the award, but you would venture to say it's somewhere in the realm of 50 out of those 250. When we first started, it was 1,000. So obviously, as you can imagine, it would scale to many, many more applicants. But now we've narrowed it down over the last 10 years to roughly 250, or not roughly, exactly 250. And those individuals compete for the award, whereby we typically get somewhere in the realm of around 50 applications. And when you talk about this as a national award, if studies show from all recruiting services that 90% of the athletes that participate in the high-end Division I athletic programs that we're talking about come from 10 different states, right? But we not only cover those states in their entirety in terms of people who are Watkins guys who have been recognized by our award, you know, but the Michigans, the Oklahomas, and many, many Alabama, Mississippi, many other states that wouldn't be vastly included in those 10 have been represented, you know, by the Watkins Award. If you're there, we'll do our very, very best to find you. I can't tell you that someone hasn't slipped through the cracks from one year to the next, but I will tell you that everyone that we have recognized for the Watkins Award has absolutely deserved the recognition that we have bestowed upon them.
Well, let me do, you know, this as well, because I wanted to start off this way, because normally I would start by doing a disclaimer. I wanted us to start this way before I did the disclaimer. And the reason why is because I want people, they heard what you just talked about, what we're looking for. Now, in, you know, the past 30 years, 31 years, there have been over 120 individuals that have been honored through the National Alliance of African American Athletes and the Franklin D. Watkins Award. Now, on this show, this is the 19th episode. Last week, I had someone, you know, I always talk about someone calling in and or somebody, you know, texting me or somebody sending me a message on any of these social networks or the email. So someone sent me an email, and all they wanted to know, and I, you know, and a lot of times I don't say this, but this show is live right now. However, you can go to any of the major podcast platforms, any of the platforms. You have an Android phone or you got an iPhone. You can go to any of the platforms and you can find you can find this show anywhere. It's a podcast. So you can listen to this show on any of the major podcast platforms after we get off here today. But, you know, I'm just going, you know, I want to be nice. And I just want to talk about the first guest that we had, which was Darnell Dinkins. Now, Darnell Dinkins was our first guest. And I just go down the list from Darnell to Wayne Lyons, DeVere Posey, Lorenzo Alexander, James Waters, Richard Uergen, Justin Blaylock, Maurice Hall, J.R. Lemon, Daryl Richard, Devin Gardner, Bobby Okereke, Josh Dobbs, Bryant Browning, David Yankee, Keith Marshall, Justin Reed, and today we got Vince Ogbossi. And I just want everyone to know that every one of those individuals, all 18 of them, were academic All-Americans. All of them went through the application process that Mr. Pearsall just talked about. There was a committee that went through to verify that they were bona fide academic All-Americans from all over the country. And they went to various schools, from Darnell Dinkins going to Pitt, Wayne Lyons went to Stanford and the University of Michigan. And let's get it straight. Wayne went to Stanford and got a degree. And then he went to Michigan and played football and got another degree. You know, DeVere went to Ohio State and Lorenzo was at Cal Berkeley. So we, you know, and Barnes, he was another young man that went to Stanford, and Richard Uergen went to Clemson, won two national championships while he was at Clemson. Also ended up with three degrees, two undergraduates, and one undergraduate and two master's degrees. I mean, these are some phenomenal. Maurice Hall, he ended up getting two degrees. Now, he ended up going back to school and getting another degree. I mean, we're talking about some incredible athletes. We're giving away free information to allow the adults in these young men's life, or in these young men's lives, to allow them to help, to plant seeds, to put them in a position and a path to get a scholarship, and also to pursue their education. I mean, Justin Reed, he talked about it. He said, well, I didn't finish at Stanford, but I'm taking classes so I can fit, because he doesn't want to be known as somebody coming through the Watkins Award and not getting his degree with all that we talk about. So we're putting positive peer pressure on these young men. But the views and opinions of Mr. Pearsall and I'm just breaking right in the middle of a sentence, but the views and opinions of Mr. Pearsall and I, this isn't BBS radio. We don't want anyone to feel that we're trying to embarrass them. There's any of our sponsors. This is T.K. and J. Everett Pearsall who are talking, and we're having just regular dialogue here. But if you want your son to get a $500,000 scholarship, then we're giving you the information to get your kid started in football whenever you want to start it. It's up to you to get him started. But man, this is just unbelievable. And the information that we're passing off to these, you know, to these parents or to these adults, these other coaches that are out here, we just want them to know, Mr. Pearsall, that, hey, look, this isn't rocket science. Well, I mean, what do you think, Mr. Pearsall, in the information that we're giving away?
Pretty straightforward, my brother, but there's no substitute for hard work. And as I've always told my kids, there is no escalator to success.
Man, you know, this is just unreal, you know, that again, that we bring guests like we're bringing on, and, you know, they start off at 17 years old, 18 years old, in school. And as I mentioned, they call you Mr. Pearsall, they call me Mr. Tate or Coach Tate. And I've had an opportunity to coach over the past 30 years on and off. But, you know, I see that our guest is already in key. He's already in. Here's what I want to say about Vince Okabasi. You know, he's a native of Houston, Texas. I always try to get this thing started here. Houston, and we know that Texas is a football state. As a matter of fact, I just found out they either built or they're building. I think it's already built. He got a $70 million high school football stadium down there in Texas. We talking real football that's going on. So now, Vince, well, let me say, I can't just call him Okabasi any longer. I've got to call him Coach O. I got to call him Coach O now. Because, you know, these guys come through, they come through our program, just like everybody. They have dreams and aspirations and playing in the NFL, and he got a brief stint. But he graduates from Hastings High School. He goes to Duke University. Now, we're going to talk, because one of the things I talk about in my pre-promo is how we're going to help you to understand how to prepare your child to get into a university like Duke University or any university. But we're going to talk specifically about Duke briefly. He had a chance, Coach O had a chance to play a brief set in the NFL. But here's the deal. He realized that coaching was his point. And we're gonna talk about that word passion a couple of times. I got a surprise for Mr. Pearsall, and I got a surprise for Coach O. So he begins his stint. Right now, he's at Boston College, and this is his second season there at Boston College. Now, we're talking about a guy that has been at UCLA. He was at Ohio State, and he was at his alma mater, which was Duke. But at Ohio State, they won the national championship that year, one of the years that he was there, 2014. They won that national championship. And, you know, Coach, there was a lot of things that were going on, but we'll just start with welcoming you to the Watkins Award Show, Coach Vincent Okabasi. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing awesome. I appreciate the kind words. You're probably a little bit too nice to me, but I appreciate the kind words. And it's been an incredible time up till now, especially with COVID going on, and we're kind of on the latter end of it now with the whole vaccine going on. So I'm enjoying life, working, and staying on course. What about yourself, Mr. Tate? What's going on there?
Hey.
So, you know, Coach, I'm a coach on this, but unlike you, I'm not doing it full time. I'm just coaching, man, high school with a 7A high school here in Georgia. And I'm sure we might have some young men that may be potential candidates for you. We'll talk about that one day. But
okay.
Help me to understand, what was your mindset about academics when you were in the eighth grade? Because, you know, a lot of people, they try to start this thing in the 11th and 12th grade. It's too late. I mean, so let's talk about you when you were in the eighth grade. Because I'll step you back. What was your mindset about academics in the eighth grade?
Well, even before the eighth grade, like even so when I was, you know, freaking in elementary school, my dad, he was very, very keen on like being knowledgeable, books, and making sure that anything but excellence in A's in the books and your grades wasn't acceptable. So we always had me and myself always had like a keen understanding, like we better take care of what we got to take care of in the classroom, and everything else will take care of itself. Cause one thing that's going to last you for a long time is your brain. All the materialistic stuff will eventually leave. So, you know, that was one thing. I couldn't bring home C's and D's. It was always either A's or B's, or if there's an issue, I need to make sure I got help or he'll help me out on it, my mom and my sister. So it was just something that was instilled in us from a very, very young age. And, you know, being a Nigerian, descent, me, especially my father, that's one thing that's kind of like a cultural thing about in the Nigerian communities. Academics is key, especially when you got so much stuff going on with basketball, football, and other stuff going around. Like because you can get hurt any moment. You know, you can lose your limbs, you can lose your legs, but you're not going to lose your brain. So that's one thing that my dad always instilled me was be keen on your books and make sure you stay in school and make sure you achieve something. You know, like as a coach, even when I was coaching at Ohio State, as you mentioned before, I got my master's from there because I wanted to make sure that I always had something to hang my hat on just besides coaching. You know, you're not just talking to a former football player, a former athlete, you're talking to a very smart guy. And I want my guys and my players to understand that you know, eventually at some point, the football or athletics or whatever you're doing extracurricular wise is going to eventually end, and you got to move on to the next plan. Some guys think of it as a backup plan when you've been involved in athletics so long in your life. I like to think of it as the next plan. What is your next plan after you're done playing football, your basketball, track, or what have you, because it's going to end inevitably at some point. So that's just one of the things that way back when my dad has said, always said, make sure you take care of your books and academics. So I've always tried to maximize that part of my upbringing and my journey, and it's worked very well for me so far.
So when you was in the ninth grade, you now go to the ninth grade. Did you look at the ninth grade as an opportunity to one day play D1 football, or were you just playing football just for the heck of it when you got to the ninth grade, or did you even play in the ninth grade?
Well, you know, in Texas, you know, you start from freaking age 4 and 5. So I played Little League, Pop Warner, elementary school, middle school, high school. So it was just what you did. You know what I'm saying? So you're playing ball because it's always what you did, and it was fun. It was something to do. But as you go through high school, and you know, when you get there, you understand, okay, there's freshman, there's sophomore, there's varsity, there's JV. And then at a certain point, you realize that, okay, I'm getting these letters and these coaches are talking to me and these scholarships start coming in, which you don't realize, oh, this is how it works. So I was just playing ball and it kind of all just happened naturally. You know, you go through your the field house back at Hastings, you see all these guys that got, you know, scholarship offers and some of the guys are at different schools and some guys are in the NFL. And you know, you aspire to be that. But, you know, if you stay the course and continue to keep your head down and do the work, it'll eventually happen for you if that's your journey. So it kind of just happened.
So did you, you know, finally figure it out in high school that merging sports or academics and athletics was going to get you a good quality education?
I don't know if I knew that as I was doing it. It was just something that that was instilled in me to be great at whatever I was doing, whether it be football, basketball, track, school, and eventually the opportunity will come where I would get a scholarship like I did, and then I'll be able to have options available to me. One thing you want to have is options. So again, you know, I had a plethora of scholarships, and it just so happened that, you know, Duke was one of the ones that I chose to accept and take on. But I do believe, like, you know, if you're not of the same academic background as me, my sister, some of my friends, it does allow you to achieve an education for free, and also allow you to play football, which you love to do. So some guys don't understand that. Well, you get a great education, you're able to do what you want to do football wise. Why did I maximize it? So I just maximized the opportunity that was given to me, you know, whether it emerged from the ninth grade on, but it just, that was already instilled with me. So it just was destined to happen.
So you leave high school and you go to Duke. And I mean, I want people to know that to go to Duke right now, it's $77,000 a year. One year at Duke University. So let's just round this thing off and say 5 years at Duke, that's $500,000 education coming out of Duke University. So, I mean, clearly you leave high school, you get to Duke. I mean, are you going through culture shock, you know, in terms of the classroom in high school to this classroom setting at Duke University?
Absolutely. I graduated high school early, and I enrolled in Duke in the spring of 2005. So some of the stuff that we had to basically adapt and adjust to and learn very quickly, I wasn't privy to at my high school level, because you know you're dealing with guys that are the valedictorians of their class, and they're very, very academically bright in their own right, but they also weren't playing 3, 4, 5 different sports. So their main focus was that. But now you're in class with those guys and you're competing with them at a certain level, which is fun, but it's also challenging. So I think one of the biggest things was just understanding the level of adjustment I was going to have the culture shock of the academic rigors, which, you know, you eventually adapt to over the course of time once you get the right amount of tutoring and assistance and aid. But one of the biggest things is probably was the time management piece as well, coming from, you know, making everything very, very smooth and efficient in high school to where, bam, you're playing football. You're waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go to lift and training, and you got practice, and then you got to go back to class for 4 to 5 hours a day in study hall. So it was just a level of time management, athletic stress, academic stress that, you know, it was a privilege to have, but it's also quite the adjustment for anybody in that role. And it was there for me, and I maximized it, and I wouldn't take it back, but I had a great journey there. And I got my degree. Very grateful.
Well, you know, I want to let the audience know that Coach Vince Okabasi, which is, you know, he's coaching at Boston College right now. You know, he's a 2005 Watkins Award honoree. And that particular year that, you know, Vince came through the system, you know, I was just kind of glancing at the individuals who came through with you, which was Robert Kibble. He went to UCLA. Muhammad Masakar went to Georgia. Sean Otis, he went to UCLA. And of course, you went to Duke, and Econ Udofia, he went to Stanford. I mean, you had a 3.9 GPA and clearly could have gone mm-hmm. virtually anywhere you wanted to go, but you went to Duke. Right. And after spending that brief stint in the NFL, you decided, you know, ideally it was certainly ideal time for you to, you know, get back into what you really knew how to do, which was coaching. I mean, clearly, you know, the academics go hand in hand with coaching. But, you know, a lot of people just don't understand coaching from a perspective of personality. And you've had an opportunity to really be around some awesome coaches. But I want to show you something before we go into a break, to show those outstanding players who might be looking at you as a coach. So I want to see if they can run this real quick so our audience can see this. So maybe Doug will pull it up real quick. I just saw he put some seconds up there. I know he's trying to cue something up, and I know Pierce are going to get a laugh out of this as well. But, okay, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to see the real Coach Vince Okabasi. This dude gets in the locker room, he makes it happen. Look here, if it's on the internet, Coach Pete, they're going to find it. You know what I mean? So I just want you all to know, when this guy gets your son or your daughter, you know, certainly in a room and have an opportunity to talk with them about their academics and athletics, you getting a guy who really is inspiring. But on the other side of this commercial, let's talk about, you know, Coach O, what type of kids are you looking to recruit? I'm going to give you that opportunity to let the parents know and the kids know what kind of kid you looking for. Somebody that's lackadaisical in his academics, but he's good as an athlete. Or you looking for that guy that's serious about his academics and he's serious about his athletics. So we're coming back off of a commercial. We're getting ready to go into that commercial. And we'll talk to Coach O on the next side of this commercial. Boy, Mr. Pearsall, we're getting you on.
Exotic Car Sharing by Kirby Road is a full-service car sharing company that has been in business for over 21 years. Based out of Palatine, Illinois, our company allows its members the ability to own fractional ownership of exotic cars at a fraction of the costs. Our share plans include reservations for weekend or weekly ride sharing. Our members get to choose from a Bentley one weekend to the McLaren 570S the next. No long paperwork, expensive maintenance, or expensive insurance requirements. Exotic Car Sharing has the fleet and capabilities to service all of our clients with quality luxury vehicles delivered at your doorstep. Register on our website at exoticcarsharing.com or call us at 888-264-3327.
It's Monday, May 31st, and we're here with Coach Vince Okabasi. We just wanted to let you know that, Coach, you know, you had an awesome career coming out of high school. I mean, you was one of the top linemen in the nation. All the scouting magazines and scouting reports from rivals, ESPN, Scout 247, Bleacher Report, had you one of the top. So now, as you look in these scouting magazines, what do you do to establish, you know, your understanding of a kid who fits the ideal football player, or I should say student athlete, in your program?
Well, it's definitely multi-layered when you talk about bringing kids into a program where you want them to be successful on and off the field, and you want them to fit into your culture of your program. And more specifically, for myself, when I'm going out and recruiting kids, I'm looking for a kid that has his head on straight. You know, I want a kid that's both academically inclined and athletically inclined, but sometimes they may not have the support, the aid, or the cast around them to have that, you know, 3.8, 3.9, but they have the mentality and mindset that if they get the right people around them, they can get to that 3.8, 3.9. And also, I want a kid that he wants to be just as good in football as he wants to be in the classroom and vice versa. No one should outweigh the other. And I think that's very critical. Sometimes guys come into college, not only at BC, but just around the nation, where football is just the only thing that they're worried about, or athletics. But like I said before, when your time comes and you're done, what's the next plan? So if a kid tells me that's the only thing that he wants to do, that's going to be very off-putting for me. But it's great. But also, just like, because I got my story told me that, you know, I had four knee surgeries coming out of college. You know, so my journey of athletics is probably predestined to end before I thought it would. So you never know what's going to happen to you. But so what's going to be the next plan? So I try to instill that in kids, like, I want you to be just as good in ball as you are in the classroom and vice versa. That way you have options available to you when it's all said and done. So I'm looking for a well-rounded kid in that regard. I'm looking for a kid that's tough-minded. He's dedicated to his craft. He's a good person. You know, when we go into schools, you ask, you know, counselors, teachers, mentors, the lunch, like anybody that has his hands on that kid or that prospect, tell me about him. How is he as a guy? Does he treat people with respect? Yes, sir. No, sir. Like, what does he do that highlights him versus anybody else in that school? And, you know, typically you get the honest response when you ask a lot of people, or you get a varying response. So typically you want to take the most consistent one. And those are the type of guys that typically like to recruit. And I want them to be very good men. And I want them to be able to do something in life after football. That way that they can have something to leave as their legacy for themselves, their family, their future son, their family. Like, it's bigger than just ball. I think football is a vessel that allows you to do a lot of things and touch a lot of different people, as it has for me. And that's one thing that I try to teach my guys currently and the guys I've had in the past, that use football as a vessel to meet people, make connections, and expand outside of your comfort zone. I think that's one thing great about college athletics in general, is that you meet so many different people through your journey that if you maximize relationships and build strong bonds with people, it can help you for a lifetime, for a lasting time, and you can do great things from that. So overall, you want great, well-rounded kids, guys that are academically inclined, athletically inclined, and want to do something good for themselves and the community and their family and life after football.
Well, Coach, I really appreciate that. I mean, I can't say nothing else other than I'm lost for words, because certainly you are the epitome of a Watkins man. You certainly have, upheld being an honoree to the highest degree. We certainly appreciate everything that you represent, not only as a Watkins man, but as a father, as a son, and certainly as a football coach who is out there trying to establish the next young man who, whether he's a Watkins honoree or not, but you just want to make sure that you make your contribution to the world by building these young, good men coming out of your program. With that said, Mr. Pearsall, hey, I tell you, man, Coach Okabasi, man, I got to find him a 5-star recruit, man. I ain't got nothing else to do there. He can put me on a mission.
Aha! Vincent Okabasi, a.k.a. V.O., a.k.a. Big Vince, a.k.a. Big V, a.k.a. Big O, a.k.a. the Nigerian Nightmare, a.k.a. Mr. Triple Team, a.k.a. a mountain of a man intellectually and physically, a.k.a. the Big Aristotle, a.k.a. life coach and football coach extraordinaire. Welcome to the show, brother.
I appreciate it. He appreciate it, man. It's glad to be here. Been a long
Absolutely.
Time, man.
We're so happy to have you on the show. I've been looking forward to this day. I tell you that I think back to when I came to Houston and had the opportunity to meet you and see you for the first time in high school. I had a chance to meet Vincent Sr. and Florence, your mother, and Blessing, your sister. Right. And most of the time when I go to football games, I try to find someone to tell me the number of the individual that I'm coming to see. But as the game started and I saw the defense get on the field, it didn't take me long to figure out who Vince Okabasi was. I watched you collapse your side of the line, multiple sacks, all kinds of tackles, and basically dominate that football game on the defensive end. It was a pleasure to see. But more importantly, from the time I met your father and your mother, and countless times after, they would state to me over and over again, we don't care about this football thing. Mm-hmm. It's great to see him play, and I'm glad that he's good at it. All I care about is that degree. All I care about is that education. Over and over again, they said that to me. Now, coming from Houston, and I know, obviously, I'm from Baltimore, and Coach Tate is from Washington, D.C., every city has its challenges. But tell me some of the obstacles that you had to overcome in your goal to be the best student athlete that you could possibly be, both going through high school, then through college, leading up until now. What are some of those hot obstacles that you faced in Houston and in general?
When you're growing up from where I came from, and Southwest Alu, Texas, you're around some influences that can take you and lead you the wrong way. And obviously I was around those as we always coming up. Everybody comes from a different parts of the city and different sections of the country. But, I knew that I wanted to do something bigger and better for myself. So, although I had my certain friends that were entangled in certain things, I didn't allow myself to be pulled in that direction. I'm very, very independent and independent thinking, and I don't like to follow people. I kind of beat to my own drum. So that wasn't quite a challenge. It was just me making a choice whether I wanted to go left or go right. And I chose to stay on the right path. And also I wanted to make my parents proud of me and not make those decisions that they'll make them not proud of me. So that was one of the biggest things, just making sure I'm staying the course and not being pulled in any one direction. And sometimes other than just like the background and some of the influence, there's an immense amount of pressure from different people, friends, family, coaches, school, community, to succeed at a certain level, whether it be high school, college, NFL. And sometimes when you don't break that barometer, that parameter of success to what people view it as, it can really put you in a place of why. Sometimes even in my own journey, like I always wanted to go play in the NFL, have a long career, but I had in the back of my mind that, you know, that it's going to end at some point in time. I was devastated when I knew it was ending for me sooner than what I anticipated, but also was more devastated at the prospect that I couldn't do what I want to do for my family based on what I envisioned and what I planned for the long haul. So that's the level that people don't like talk, or people don't quite talk about, is the pressure from the outside forces to be this, you know, this person on the pedestal from your community. But we all have our own perspective of success and our own barometers of success. And I'm able to do more than I probably could have done for my family now, because I've adjusted and I've adapted to life outside of football. I think another big challenge that you kind of see from a coach's perspective is, growing up as an athlete, you're in a bubble that, you know, it's a privilege to be in, but also you're in a bubble to where you're always the top guy. You're always given certain type of access and privilege, and it's great. But once you leave that bubble of athletics, you're gonna be integrated into the real world. And sometimes the adjustment of that for guys that are not ready for it is very, very tough moving forward. Even when you're injured, myself, for example, you know, I get injured my fourth or fifth day at Duke, and I get taken out. I got a knee surgery, got an operation. I'm out for a whole year. You being actively involved in the sport, working out, practicing, is much different than being on in the training room, rehabbing and getting yourself back. You feel like a part of you is missing. You know what I'm saying? So multiply that times 1,000 when all you've been worrying about is or all you've been doing your whole life is football from the age of 5, 6 to, you know, 22, 23. And it ends in a drop of a dime like that for those guys who had the opportunity to go to the next level. Is a sense of a place of emptiness and like, wow, what am I going to do now? So that's a challenge within itself that guys probably are not looking at it as early on as they should be. But I believe that was one of the challenges that we all faced once it happened to us. So that's the message I try to, you know, deliver to my guys. Like, hey, man, like at some point, this thing is not going to be just glitz and glamour anymore. You're going to hit the real world, and you got to make sure you're able to navigate it and adapt to the real world, because this is a bubble. You know, we all feel it at some point. Only a 0.002, 0.003, 0.004, 0.005% of guys have NFL careers beyond three and a half years. It's not a lot. So you're playing the numbers game, and that's a huge challenge to get guys out of the mindset like, hey man, God bless you if you do, but let me tell you how to get ready for the next plan, especially as a coach. If you know that they may not be athletically gifted or talented enough to make it to the next level. Me and coach for the 49ers and coach high level guys, first rounders to, you know, free agents. You kind of have an understanding of who will be able to make it at that next level, who can't. So you try to deliver that message as much as possible to understand like there's certain challenges you're going to go through, but there's certain realities you got to face. And so that's one of the things that you know, I myself face, and I myself try to help guys navigate through as they go through their careers.
Now, Vince, you did something really special coming out of high school and going into Duke as you evaluated, you know, the tens and tens of 40 and 50 and 60 scholarships. Like, you were a 5-star athlete. And mm-hmm. at the end of the day, when you look at the Duke program, yes, Spurrier was able to get some people to overachieve, and then he got out of there after that season. But being able to get a 5-star defensive tackle at Duke University was absolutely unheard of. In fact, at any position was absolutely unheard of. But evaluating all of these different schools, which was every one of the best schools in the country, and taking a look at what they brought to the table, you decided to go to a program and build that program. And I know you look back now today and see where they are and know that you were the beginning of where they are today with the idea that in any way, shape, or form, they're thought of as a competitive football team. What kind of mindset do you have? And this is for our listening audience, the parents and the athletes, where you take a look and evaluate all the different opportunities where you can go. But you say, I want to build a program. I want to be the guy that starts something that I look back and see the legacy of what I built in a program. And now that program is never the same again. What is the mindset that you had in picking Duke?
Well, you know, the great thing about my folks, man, is that they were able to take me around to a lot of different places going to my senior year to visit and evaluate the campus, the people, the coaches, the players, and get a good feel for like how it would be. And if I could see myself there for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. And we did that. And one thing about Duke, when we went to go visit during I believe the summer going into my senior year, is that I had a natural affinity there that it felt something felt right about it during the summertime when I went to go visit. I had the feeling a few times, but I just knew immediately when I got on the campus that something was like, okay, I got to come back here and see if I still had the same feeling when I take my official visit. So I took my official visit there after the season, I believe, and I knew that's where I wanted to be. One, because I trusted the message and the vision of the program at the time that was led by Ted Roof. I fell in love with the campus, the people. I thought there were some like-minded guys on that trip in my recruiting class, or now some that were my former teammates back then, or now, should I say. And I also wanted to make sure that I was doing something that I wanted to do and not what everybody else wanted me to do.
The easy
choice was to go to an A&M, a Miami, Oklahoma State, Arizona. That's the easy thing to do, but I want to do something that can impact the culture, the vision, and the prospect of success to Duke football for a long time. That's what I chose to do. And I will say that, you know, had I not gone to Duke, I don't know if I would be where I'm at right now in life. So, you know, regardless of the win-loss column, you know, did I have the level of success, the win-loss column that I wanted to have? No. But I can tell you this, in life, after football, when I go speak to people, when I meet people, I meet families, especially in this recruiting process, they understand that they're talking to a person that saw the bigger picture. Thank God I did. I saw the bigger picture, and it's paying dividends for me now in life at the football at 34, 35 years old. And I'm grateful for my decision. I don't think I would ever change anything I did back then. I'm a guy that moves very much off of my gut and my true feeling. I do have objective parameters that I measure, but if it feels right, it's right. If it's not, it's not. And I knew some places that I visited, they were probably the more the more athletically inclined place, the more prestige and et cetera. Absolutely. But I wanted to change some. And now that changed, even what, 10, 12 years later, you're seeing 2, 3 guys getting drafted from Duke. The program is not the dark horse of the ACC anymore. They're very competitive, and they're getting to that level where they compete. They can compete with any team they play any week on the schedule. So yep. I think that it was in my own personality, being an independent guy and wanting to promote change for myself, change for a program, and do something I felt was right. And I don't regret it. It was a great decision. I mean, I'm benefiting from now until the end of my time. So you got to have a very, very good head on. You should have your head on straight and make sure you know what you want out of the program, right, out of life.
Now, with what you've gone through in high school, in college, and then obviously playing a little bit and professionally and now in coaching, what has the Watkins Award meant to you from the time you applied for it, became a Watkins alumni, and even through your journey? What has the Watkins Award meant to you?
Oh, man. It's, you know, when back in high school, when you know, we found out about the Watkins Award and some of the guys that had been through it before me and the true meaning of like being a Watkins man. It means everything that we embody, everything that I embody on a daily basis, leadership, dedication, commitment. You want to make sure that you're promoting change within your community and you're uplifting guys to be something better than what they want to be. And that's one thing that, you know, I always wanted to make sure that I was able to do in life after, I keep saying life at the football, because again, it only lasts but so long, but I want to make sure in life at the football, I want to have something that I could represent, that I can permeate through the guys in my room, through the former Watkins guys, the future Watkins guys, and guys that may not be in the Watkins, be a Watkins man, but they have Watkins principles that I teach to them on a daily basis. So I believe that it is a thing that's very special. It's a very, very prestigious award, and it's not to be taken very lightly. And I hold that in very, very high regard. It's something that, you know, we got into it when I was 16, 17. I'm 35 years old right now. We're still talking about it, and it's something that I weigh heavily on my heart. So I'm very proud to be a Watkins man, and I will continue to be a Watkins man. Anybody wants to get into the be a Watkins man, you got to make sure that it's something that you hold with a very, very high regard. It's not something to be taken very lightly. You gotta practice it. You gotta be it. You gotta breathe it. You gotta live it. It's something that you gotta do on a daily basis. And if you are that, then you know, Mr. Everett, reach out to you. You gotta be good at football too. Now
you gotta be good at football too.
It's not the intangible piece, but you gotta be a beast on the field. But I think that it's been an incredible journey for me being a Watkins man, and I can't wait to see more of the guys after me and they keep thriving on, you know.
That's great, man. Thank you so much for those kind words about what we're doing. Tell us, and briefly, some of the great things that you're doing now. Obviously, we see BC in the background. In that journey, we know that you coached a couple of different college programs in the NFL, now at BC. But you also encourage your guys to do stuff off the field and giving back. And I know that you're always a pillar of the community wherever you live. What are some of the great things that you're doing right now, Vince?
Well, it's been a great journey through COVID, man. You know, we had some rough times, some very, very rough times with this whole COVID deal. But now that we're reopening up and we're getting back to living a somewhat life of normalcy, we'll be able to really get into our community outreach and go to some of these high schools. Okay, go to some of these high schools and some of these places to give back to the community. We weren't able to do that as much as we would like, obviously, because COVID and you can't be within, you know, certain feet of people. But I know that once we get back to just the level of normalcy, we'll be heavily involved in the community. One thing that I will say that COVID did for us as a community and even as a football team, it brought us very much closer together. We were able to talk through some of the issues that we were facing, whether it be police brutality, racism, and we were able to have those uncomfortable conversations with our guys to make them understand that, you know, regardless of your background, you got to be empathetic to people that have faced certain injustices and certain type of treatments from either now or back then in their community or what their family are facing. And we were able to talk about that and have an open forum of dialogue, which I believe you need to always have. But I believe that because COVID allowed us to be more basically centralized and keeping our feet kind of planted, we were able to have those conversations and be uncomfortable around each other, and we grew from that. So it's been a great deal. We've been doing community outreach. We've been doing community walks within our own bubble of BC because of COVID, but we've been trying to do as much as we can within the rules, but we're going to be able to get out a lot more now because of COVID. It's kind of
so quickly, give us your social media so people can reach out to you if they want to get in contact with you before they give us the music. We want everybody to be able to reach out.
Sure. My Twitter is Coach, C-O-A-C-H V underscore Yagi, wait, Y-A-G-I. My Instagram is the same exact thing. And then my Facebook is Vince Ogbase, V-I-N-C-E. Last name Ogbase, O-G-H-O-B as in boy, A-A-S-E. Those are my social medias.
Excellent. I'll turn it back over to Coach Tate before we end it. Thanks, Vince, man. You're awesome.
Paris to see what they getting, buddy, if they go up to BC. That's Coach O doing the whip when he was at Ohio State when they won the national championship. Coach O, I just want to tell you, man, thank you so much for your time today. I mean, you certainly were, you know, an incredible inspiration, not only to the young men who inspire to play at the next level after high school, but just inspiring to all the other Watkins Award honorees and potential honorees as they look forward to one day finding themselves in this position. You've had, the Watkins Award, Mr. Pearsall and Coach Kate here with Vince Okabasi, better known as Coach O, on this show today. And we really appreciate him. I want to do a shout out in Northwest Missouri to Alex. I mean, he listens to our show all the time, always sending me text messages and letting us know we got B's Kitchen down at 226 Greenville Street in Newnan, Georgia. Of course, you know, we always got Exotic Cars, you know, giving us the opportunity to do these shows. And Pearsall, he renting these Maseratis and Lamborghinis whenever he's out of town. But we're going to make it up to Boston so we can get to a game. We're going to have to come up there and see you in action. And, you know, we don't expect you to do the whip in the locker room. But we certainly do appreciate the opportunity to have you on our show, Coach O. And certainly you make sure you tell your parents and your sister that I said, and, of course, Mr. Pearsall, that we say hello. We give our love, our greetings, tell them to be safe, and you keep doing what you're doing up there, because we know that energy you bring to BC, one of these days, you're going to be the head coach at somebody's institution. There's no doubt you on that track. Oh,
I appreciate that, Mr. Todd. I don't really do it. I appreciate you too, brother. This is excellent. I love this guy. Do it more often. And please let Charles Fenner know I say hello too. And God bless. Let me know when I get on next time.
Well, thank you, brother.
Oh, man. Hey, you've had another edition of the Watkins Award. And hey, we have Coach Pearsall here as well. We're going to call him a coach too because he gets these guys inspired for AKA Big O. So we're going to keep it at that. So we're here to another edition. And thank you very much again for listening and certainly doing our show. Coach Pearsall, we out of here.
Your mind to it. Wake up, I'm on to the next. New day, I gotta do my best. Every day I put the work in. The grind never stop, you ain't never see me rest. See me on top, I never fall. I speak my truth and turn it to law. Do it for the drive, you know it's really my passion. Never gonna stop me, really, I'll make it happen. I gotta get up and grab it. The money want me to have it. What more could I say? I'm top billing. I grew from the dirt, guess I had to make a million. I grew up, I swear I rose from the valley. Every day I put the work in, I gotta keep a tally on beat. Pockets stay heavy, when you see me, don't leave. Falling days in the streets, had homies in the struggle. Go get it, you got it, I see you. Go get it, you got it, I see you. Go get it, you got it, I see you. Go get it, you got it, I see you. Go get it, you got it, I see you. All you gotta do is put your mind to it.